Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds' Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds' Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
And welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here for our final mid-month check-in for 2022, where we go over the latest Asian American book and publishing news for you. Rira, we've made it to the end of the year.
Yes.
How do you feel?
The end of 2022. Somehow it was very slow, but very fast. So that's how I feel.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably the first full year where we didn't necessarily feel confined to our homes, even though I did spend a lot of time at home. But yeah, you're right. Like, a lot of things happen and then nothing happened. And I feel like next year will probably be more of the same, to be honest, especially with, you know, I mean, COVID's not over. And I've had multiple holiday events this week get canceled or derailed because of someone testing positive. So, you know, we're still living with it.
Yeah. A couple days ago, I went to Disneyland and I was just shocked by so many people who did not have masks on. And, you know, they had like infants and toddlers. And I'm like, do you not care about the safety of your children? I kept my mask on the entire time. And like whenever I ate something, I like found like a desolate corner somewhere, like a mouse.
So. I mean, neither of us are parents, so I can't speak to what they actually think. But I get the feeling from my friends who are parents that they just have a fatalistic view on things, because as a parent of young children, you're going to get sick. Your kids bring home so many germs from wherever they go. They're sticking their hands in your mouth. So, you know, at some point, you just have to say, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And at the very least, my friends are fully vaxxed. So, you know, hopefully it'll just be mild for them. But I've had a couple of people that I know get like knocked out. So, you know, you still never know. When it's scary, it's still scary.
I mean, my youngest brother, he got COVID from school. So it was he got it like pretty bad. He had to like go to the hospital a couple times to like get some serious checkups. But Yeah, besides COVID stuff, the last couple months, a lot of companies have been going on strike. Today, the San Francisco Macy's headquarters, they're going on strike on Christmas Eve, the busiest day of the company.
I mean, if you want to bring attention to your cause, this is the way, because you know, retail's been down for the last few years. So that's ballsy. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I heard about it this morning and I was like, dang. Well, props to them.
Yeah.
Because we are pro-union on this show. And speaking of union, we will update you guys all on the HarperCollins union strike.
Still ongoing after like
still
almost
ongoing.
A month.
It's day 27. No word from HarperCollins.
Well, we'll talk more about that in a bit. But as always, we start off our mid-month check-in with the latest publishing updates from Asian and Asian American authors. We're still omitting our HarperCollins news, right?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
And I think Publishers Weekly is also doing the same, because as I was looking through their listing, it seemed like they were missing a lot of HarperCollins books. So I was like, okay.
I mean, maybe it's because all the publishers are on strike.
Yeah, maybe.
And not submitting those.
Yeah, the submissions have stalled and there aren't any, which is good. It makes, you know, like it's nice that industry folks are supporting the strike, even though they're not part of HarperCollins.
But yeah, let's get started with our first deal. Riri, do you want to get started?
Yeah, sure. So our first book deal is Simon & Schuster's imprint Beach Lane Books acquired Shell Song, a family history-based picture book by author-illustrator Sharon Fujimoto Johnson. When a girl's Japanese-American grandfather is unjustly arrested and sent to an incarceration camp in Hawaii during World War II, collecting seashells becomes a source of comfort and hope for him, his family, and future generations. Publication is scheduled for spring 2025.
I like that in the description, it's just straight up, it's unjust, right? Because I feel like for a lot of people, they still feel like incarceration, like Japanese American incarceration was like a necessary evil, which is total bullshit, right?
I mean, it. I'm happy that more children's books and young adult books are exploring that time where Japanese Americans were sent to incarceration camps. But it like saddens me that like so many of those books are getting banned. And it just seems like a lot of public schools that are not on the West Coast, they're not covering it at all. They're not covering the injustices that the Japanese Americans faced. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's,
I mean,
a little, America, it's a little bleak.
Surely America couldn't have done anything wrong in its long history of slavery, colonialism, imperialism. Yeah, like we mentioned, stories about this time period is still very few and far between, even though it's a major event in specifically Asian and Japanese American history. So always love to have more stories. Okay, next up, Worthy Kids bought world rights to an untitled picture book by Sanae Ishid. The picture book follows a girl with very big feelings who finds a creative outlet when her mother reminds her of her namesake and the history of sashiko, the Japanese practice of mending clothes through decorative embroidery. Publication is planned for winter 2024.
I've heard of sashiko, the like the art of like mending clothes through decorative embroidery. I think you use like patches of old cloth to like mend it with like the new clothing. So it's very fascinating.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of these Japanese domestic skills that are like specialist skills, like artisan skills in Japanese culture, like tree trimming and flower arrangement. I'm not familiar with this practice, but it's really cool that, you know, we have picture books to teach not only Japanese diaspora children about their culture, but also like kids in general about specifics about Japanese culture.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it will make a beautiful picture book, considering that embroidery, anytime I see it, I'm like, man, I wish I had that skill. I know we are in an era where women are kind of looked down upon for hanging on to domestic skills. I was like, I don't know. I kind of wish that I knew how to sew and embroider.
I mean, but when you make an art.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be forced into it just because, you know, it's like a housework requirement. Anyway, next up, in an exclusive submission, Disney and Rick Riordan Presents acquired two untitled YA horror novels by Judy I. Lin, the author of A Magic Steeped in Poison. Pulling from the darkest corners of Taiwanese folklore and urban legend, the first story follows a Taiwanese-Canadian teenager in Vancouver's Chinatown who gets caught up in an epic battle of monsters, power, and destiny as she fights to save her sister from possession by an otherworldly evil spirit. Publication is slated for October 2024. Man, Judy is killing it. She was also in our last mid-month episode, Book Deals.
I mean, this is Judy's wheelhouse, right? Like fantasy, Chinese traditions, and world building. And I'm really excited to see what she brings to the table this time.
Yeah. It sounds really cool and epic.
Yeah. All right. Next up, First Second acquired at auction, Michelle Wong's debut YA graphic novel, Terminal Hope. For fans of Marissa Meyer and Marie Lu, the graphic novel is about an orphan teen who must team up with a rogue android to survive the underbelly of mankind's last remaining sanctuary and thwart city enforcers when he becomes a target for powers he unwillingly received. Publication is scheduled for 2026. Love a good story about rebelling against cops and special powers.
Yeah, I love books with, you know, androids as well. It's always really fun. I mean, I think that's just because I grew up with anime, like Ghost in the Shell, yeah. And Cyborg 007. So it's like, yeah, my childhood.
Yeah, congrats to Michelle on her debut.
All right, next up, in a preempt, Simon & Schuster acquired world rights to ALA Asian Pacific American Award for Literature winner Jane Park's picture book, Outside Mom, Inside Mom. Illustrated by Lenny Wen, the book is a celebration of code switching in which a boy discovers how his mother's personality and his own shine differently when they feel comfortable enough to be their fullest selves. Publication is slated for fall 2024. Ooh, code switching.
Yeah, I mean, that's a concept that, at least for me, I didn't learn until later in life. And so I think teaching this concept to kids early on will probably do a lot to like teach them about something that they're probably already doing unconsciously, right?
Yeah, and I love how it's also about the mom code switching, because I feel like, as children of immigrant parents, we don't get to see our parents be their full selves. We see them as our parents. So when we see them with like other friends or whatnot, like they become totally different people. So it's interesting. And I'm glad that this picture book is going to explore that a little bit.
All right. Our next deal. For six figures, Del Rey preempted world English rights to Molly X. Chang's To Gaze Upon Wicked Gods and two other books in a planned trilogy. To Gaze Upon Wicked Gods is set in a Chinese fantasy world that has been colonized by a scientifically advanced Roman Empire. Its heroine is a young woman blessed with the power of death who fights to survive while protecting those she loves. Then her magic is discovered by an enemy prince, and she must decide if saving her family is worth betraying her country. The novel is set for release in 2024. Wow. That's a lot of world building in like a few sentences. Do you think we'll get like future Greek gods in this? Like, are there, gods are in the title, right? So we're definitely getting like deities, right?
Possibly.
Yeah, I want to know.
I know that there's crossovers with like Roman gods and Greek gods. So I don't know. But I do like the fact that it is about colonization once again.
I also wonder, will she and this enemy prince kiss? These are the questions I ask when I see a fantasy story about an enemy prince.
Glad to know that you have your priorities straight, Marvin. All right, next up. Bloomsbury bought debut author Kelsey Yu's YA thriller, It's Only a Game. Marina Chan and her friends are blackmailed into playing a video game with deadly consequences that forces them to lie, trespass, and steal in real life. But the deeper into the game they get, the more Marina realizes that whoever is pulling the strings knows too much about the past she's trying to leave behind. Publication is set for spring 2024. I like the title. It's Only a Game.
Yeah, it reminds me of The Game, that Michael Douglas movie, which, you know, it's about Michael Douglas' character playing like essentially a LARP game that gets a little too real. But this time it's like a bunch of friends and it sounds really thrilling.
Yeah. I wonder, because it says they have to do things in real life. It reminds me of a lot of video games that made you like wait in real time for missions to show up. I remember there was a game in my childhood where you literally had to wait until the next day in order to proceed with the mission. And then there have been other games where you have to go outside to complete the mission. It was supposed to like encourage kids to actually go outside and to stop playing video games for 24 hours straight. So, yeah, it kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah, but true gamers know that you can just set the game clock one day forward and just skip that whole thing.
Oh, yeah, I totally did that for Animal Crossing. But yeah, this sounds really fun. I love books about video games, obviously. total geek here.
Yeah.
And it kind of sounds like there's like similar stakes as in like the Hunger Games, you know?
I mean, I don't think it's a death game, is it?
And no, it's not a death game, but it's like, oh, the stakes are serious. It's not just a game,
yeah.
Even though the title of the book is called It's Only a Game.
Very clever. All right. Next up. Arctis Books USA acquired the picture book Little Sisters, written and illustrated by Tomomura, translated from its original French by Nanette McGuinness. An only child daydreams about having one and then many little sisters and all the fun they can have together. Publication is scheduled for spring 2024. This sounds like a good book to give to a kid about to become an older sibling.
I was about to say, yeah, exactly. Were you happy that, you know, you eventually got a sibling?
I don't remember my mom's pregnancy that much. I do remember throwing, it wasn't exactly a tantrum, but I faked an arm injury in the hospital when my mom was giving birth to my brother.
Oh my
For
God.
The attention. I do remember that because I received a Big Bird doll as compensation.
Wow, bribery. There are kids who are really excited to have siblings, and I don't think I was one of them. My mom tells me that, like, at the beginning of, the first couple days that my younger brother was brought home, I would, like, hide him in closets and, like, random places. But after like the first week or so, she said, oh, you were like the bestest older sister, like took care of your brother like really well. I was like, I think by that point, I accepted my fate that this baby is stuck with me forever. So might as well deal with him.
I think the transition between having all of your parents' attention and sharing it is tough, right? Especially if you're young. Like I was only two when my brother was born. So I'm sure I was not the most happy about it.
Yeah, oh. I mean, terrible twos and whatnot.
Yep.
All right, next up, Delacorte Press bought debut author Keshi Chow's The Girl with No Reflection. Inspired by Chinese folklore, this dark YA fantasy follows a young woman who travels to the royal palace for her betrothal to the crown prince, only to discover an eerie parallel world existing in secret within the palace mirrors, and a host of living reflections dwelling inside it. Publication is planned for summer 2024.
I feel like you and I are both fans of like the supernatural Chinese folklore with court intrigue.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And this sounds pretty amazing. I think the parallel dimension thing works because like the Chinese like underworld is pretty bureaucratic. If you remember from reading books like The Ghost Bride, it's a lot of court officials and queuing and ministers. And so it being like a mirror of a real life palace is like, it's pretty fitting.
Yeah, and there's a supernatural element to mirrors across cultures. In some cultures, mirrors are used to summon the dead, summon spirits. It's also used to trap spirits. And also in like literary works, they're used as portals to other worlds, like Alice in Wonderland, or a way to see the future, like Lord of the Rings. So, yeah.
Just the most versatile literary device, mirrors.
Yes.
All right. Our next deal. Union Square Kids acquired in a preempt Rhonda Romani's middle grade novel, Tagging Freedom. The story follows a 13-year-old Syrian graffiti artist at the beginning of the Syrian Revolution, who, after a close call with the secret police, is sent to live with his Syrian-American cousin in a small town in Massachusetts. Together, they discover the power of activism and the courage it takes to stand up for freedom of speech everywhere. Publication is planned for fall 2023.
Yes, we love stories about young activists.
This is just a fresh prince, right? Like, I guess
the fresh prince.
I guess we don't know. I guess the cousin isn't like a rich judge, this is definitely like got in a fight, mom got scared, sent him to his cousin in probably the suburbs of Boston or something. It is kind of funny that the family thinks the cops are less aggro in America.
No, definitely. But I like the fact that art is being used as a way to, you know, rebel and to be an activist. I feel like people undermine a lot of artists being like, what are you going to do with all that art? You're not going to be able to change the world or make money. But in reality, art can do a lot of good. So yeah. I'm really glad that we see that aspect in this book.
Yeah.
And in such a, and in a middle grade book too. I love how it's like in the eyes of a 13-year-old. All right. Next up, Dial bought world rights to Little Bird Layla, written by Asian Pacific American Award for Literature winner Kelly Yang and illustrated by Shindy Yan. The picture book shows how Layla acts as a translator for her parents who speak Chinese and how she begins to teach them English as well. Publication is set for summer 2024 with Nancy Mercado editing.
You know, it's about time children of immigrants get this type of representation as the official translator for their parents. I was lucky that my father is actually pretty fluent in English, so I didn't have to do this for my parents. But I know plenty of friends who this is their job, to like call the cable company for their parents.
Yeah, I am that child. I book doctor appointments for my family and also sign school papers. That was the thing that... Like, as soon as my youngest brother went to school, because we have a huge age gap, I was pretty much the parent, like going to student, going to like parent teacher conferences and translating for my mom while she was there. So, yeah, this is an experience that a lot of us go through.
Yeah.
But my dad was also, I wouldn't say he's like perfectly fluent, but he is like fluent enough that I talk to him in English. So at least I had it halfway easy.
But yeah, for me, though, my dad also traveled a lot for work. So for much of the year, I was just me and my mom. And so I guess I did have to translate for her as well. It's one of the things we can all relate to is explaining not only like I feel like it's not only English but also like American culture to our parents. Like that's another like, I think that's the next level is explaining why prom exists or like why I need to stay after school to do extracurriculars that isn't studying for the SAT.
Yeah, and I love how this story also says that the child teaches her parents English, and I'm like, What immigrant parent is willing to sit through their kid teaching them English? I feel like they're very, you know, they have a lot of pride.
That's kind of fantasy to me, but I'm sure.
This is wishful thinking. I feel like a lot of immigrant parents would prefer to just take night classes or like online classes rather than learn from their child, because it puts them in a power, like a power loss. You know, the dynamic is tilted.
Maybe Kelly Yang's plan is to have adults read this book to children as a way for both of them to learn English, and then hoping to like tamp down that pride, you know?
Yeah. You need to meet us halfway, okay? It's so hard doing like translation for, you know, both sides. So
yeah,
a lot of the times, like I have to ask my mom, like, why do Koreans do this? So, you know, it would be a lot easier if she spoke English fluently. So, I hope that this encourages parents as well to meet their children halfway and, you know, to take time to, you know, learn.
Yeah. All right. Our next deal, Kids Can Press bought world rights to What Lolo Wants, written by Christina Oxtra and illustrated by Jamie Bauza. Maria loves to spend her days drawing with her grandfather Lolo. But when Lolo begins to forget things, Maria must come up with a creative way to figure out what Lolo wants. Publication is slated for fall 2024.
Oh, it sounds like the grandfather is going through dementia or Alzheimer's.
Yeah, which... It's a hard thing to deal with and only gets harder. I mean, I love that this book is about taking care of your elders and like not becoming frustrated with them, like kind of being proactive in figuring out how to better interact and take care of them. I feel like the flip side of like the children of immigrant experience that we mentioned in the last book is like a lot of times we do get frustrated with our parents and our grandparents for, you know, not understanding things.
Yeah. And I also love the fact that, you know, Maria uses drawing, which is a shared activity that, you know, she does with her grandfather. Again, art is used for good in this instance. All right, next up, in an exclusive submission, Random House Studio acquired world rights to Noodles on a Bicycle by Kyo McClear. The book will be illustrated by Ezra Jack Heath's Illustrator Award winner, Gracie Chang. This picture book follows Tokyo's bicycle food deliverers, the Demae, who balance towering trays of steaming hot noodles on their shoulders while navigating crowded city streets. Publication is set for fall 2024.
Speaking of like Japanese skills, I feel like it's the type of thing where it's like there's no practical reason they need to or should be doing this, but they do because it's just what they do and they're really, really good at it.
Yeah, I think it will make a really good picture book with lovely illustrations. I mean, like, this sounds like a skill that is very visually pleasing.
I feel bad for them. Like, reading the description, I'm like, like, you can just hire more workers and not have to deliver them all at once, right? You should demand better working conditions, my man.
Again, we're pro-union on this podcast. Well, that is our roundup of December's book deals. And I guess we're going to briefly recap on the HarperCollins strike. It is day 27 and no word from the executives. And as of this moment right now, Babbel author Arhef Kwong and Molly McGee are co-hosting the rally outside HarperCollins headquarters in New York at 195 Broadway. And it's a pretty big turnout from what I'm seeing on Twitter. The rally, it comes after HarperCollins CEO Brian Murray. He released an open letter to the authors and agents who are on strike right now. And he said that the contract demands made by the union, which are many and far-reaching, failed to account for the market dynamics of the publishing industry and our responsibility to meet the financial demands of all our business stakeholders, including all employees, authors, and booksellers. So pretty much he's accusing the union of, I guess, like mislabeling, mischaracterizing the negotiations they've been making with the company. Pretty much saying that the demands that they are making, which is pretty much we want a living wage for our skilled work, is unreasonable.
Yeah,
and I mean, that they did not try to negotiate, which is totally false.
Yeah, I mean, when the guy says stakeholders, he means investors and stockholders and board of directors, which means, yeah, if we pay you more, that means our stakeholders get less, which, you know, they probably should. I mean, the whole distribution of profits is probably already pretty skewed. And so what the union is asking for isn't like pay us more so you can make the same. It's like, let's have some equity here. Let's redistribute and make sure that everyone gets a fair shake. And you can still make your money. You'll still make your money. But maybe you can stand to make a little less. And the thing with like the way that capitalism works and the way corporations work is making less money is like the ultimate sin. What the CEO is probably afraid of is if the dividends or the growth rate for investors goes down or stagnant, they'll get fired. Which, to be fair, they probably have golden parachutes, so they'll be fine.
Yeah, and it's like really frustrating because it's impossible to live in New York City or even like New Jersey, like Jersey City or in the tri-state area with like train stops with like a $45,000 like dollar annual salary. I'm pretty sure entry level doesn't even make that. And it's just impossible unless you have family or spouse financial support. And it really sucks because publishing staff, a lot of them are probably in student debt. Can you imagine living on a $45,000 annual salary, if not less, with student debt while living in New York, because they require you to come into the office for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, I can't, because I lived off of that when I first graduated college, but I was living at home in LA. And even then, I knew, like, from my friends who did move to New York, that that's not enough. Unless you're planning on sharing, like, your room with roommates, like, not even have your own room in your apartment.
Yeah, and editing and, you know, editing, publicity, marketing, sales, these are all skilled positions. Even if it's entry level, you still need a degree to get those jobs. You need internships. And of course, you need financial support in order to get those internships, usually. So a lot of it is skewed towards people who are
privileged, right?
Privileged. And right now, even that privilege is not enough to get a living wage. So that says something.
And it's just another reminder that these publishing companies are corporations. And the jobs of corporations is to protect their stakeholders, i.e. their investors, and not exactly like their mission, which is to, you know, publish books.
Yeah. And it just makes me really sad that people think passion equals pay. You know, like fair pay, saying, oh, well, you're doing what you love, so therefore you should just take whatever we give you.
Yeah.
And that is such a, like, that's not even just publishing. That is like every single creative field. And it is infuriating.
Yeah. I mean, you and I, Rira, have been the victims of this this way of thinking right? Like, sure, like if you're really passionate about something, you're willing to do it for less, but you can only do that if you have other ways to support yourself. And for a lot of us, it's like the thing that we're passionate about won't be able to do that, right? So it's really easy to, like, I feel like a lot of people in publishing are there because it's something they want to do, right? Like, they're passionate about books, about the power of books, of knowledge, of empathy to change the world. I mean, I feel like given that they have been paid fairly, you wouldn't have that job unless you really believed in it. But at some point, you're also going to need to demand to be treated fairly.
Yeah, and I feel like it's not fair to pressure your workers, saying, well, if you don't do it, then someone less qualified will do your work, and they're not going to care as much as diversity and education. So are you really going to let kids read subpar books because you're not getting a living wage? And it's like, really? You're going to be using that,
right,
against them?
It's just corporate gaslighting. And the thing is, like, the people who do this job really do care. So that might actually work for a while. But I think it's really cool to see that even after almost a month, that these workers are still on the picket line and in solidarity, because it does show that everyone's in it together, right? Like, everyone's at this point, everyone's all in. It's been a month. Like, everyone's there because they really believe in it and because they believe in helping each other, right? If you're just one person, it's really easy to get stamped out. But when you rise up as a group, it becomes much harder to ignore. And the longer it drags out, the more disruptive it gets. And, you know, I hope that they do have the funds to keep supporting themselves as it drags out, because, like, you know, the work stoppage means they're not getting paid neither. So, you know, they're already underpaid and now they're putting their livelihoods on the line to, you know, stand up for their rights.
But yeah, like, HarperCollins Union, they do have a strike fund. So if you would like to donate, you can find their link on Twitter, I believe. Their Twitter handle is at HCPUnion. And they should have a link tree to all of their links. So they have their strike fund. They have ways that you could support them, whether it's buying stuff at their shop or promoting on social media. They have graphics as well. They also have reports and surveys. So they have numbers on their side. It's not just like, hey, we're going on strike because of these unclear reasons. No, they have hardcore numbers.
Yeah.
And it will show you why the strike is very important.
And the fact is the money is there. It's not
like, money is definitely there, you guys. Like, the CEO got, like, I feel like every CEO this past year got, like, a super high raise for themselves. And I'm like, really? You could probably distribute that and pay your staff, like, a living wage. Probably a comfortable living wage.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. That is just, that's how our world works, right?
That's how capitalism works. And I hope we find our way out of this hellhole.
I know. Riro, you and I ever become CEOs, we're going to be better, right?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I mean, like, listen, we've gotten emails and we've gotten DMs requesting how they can help our podcast. They've asked, like, oh, I would like to intern, or do you guys need help with transcription? And it's just, I am unwilling to get help unless I can pay, like, for that help. Because I've been burned before by unpaid internships and by people taking advantage of my passion for things. It's not fair. If I can't do it by myself, then, like, why should I expect somebody else to do it for free?
Yeah.
So that is my mentality.
I think Rear and I have been working out ways to maybe, you know, maybe be able to do that at some point next year. So stay tuned. 2023 might be the year Books and Boba grows a little. I don't know. We'll see.
Books and Boba Incorporated? I don't know.
No, well.
but a way that people can support us so that we can at least cover our hosting costs, you can go to our bookshop.org affiliate page. We have a number of lists by genres, by all of our author interviews and our book club picks. We get 10% from our commissions, and another 10% goes to independent bookstores all across America. So not only are you helping this podcast, but you're supporting local indie bookstores.
All things that we love.
Yeah, and we also have a shop for merch. We do not promote it enough, but
yeah, we probably should have said something like a month ago, because I feel like it's too late now to buy it as Christmas gifts. But if you do some Books and Boba merch, we have sweatshirts, we have t-shirts, we have book bags. I've seen a couple in the wild, and it's always really weird to see other people wearing our stuff, but that's another way you can support us and also represent at the same time.
And hopefully we'll have new designs soon to add to our store. So for those of you who already own that Books and Boba swag, maybe you can buy some more. Who knows? Capitalism.
Oh, have we become capitalism? We've become everything we hate. Speaking of,
we're a little bit better than what we hate. I'd like to think a little bit better.
Just a little bit. Speaking of the HarperCollins strike and R.F. Kuang, Rira, what are we reading for the month of December?
So we are reading R.F. Kuang's Babel, and we are actually splitting up the book for December and January. So for the month of December, we are reading the first 12 chapters. So if you are planning to post your thoughts on our Goodreads forums, please use the spoiler tag, especially if you are reading past that 12th chapter mark. And then for January, we're going to be reading the second half of the book. This is our first time on this show we're doing this format. Usually we just save our book talk for when we finish the book. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's been the reason why we haven't been doing extra long books for a while, because Rira and I, you know, we read a ton of books for this podcast, for our author chats and for our book club. And for a while, reading books that are like over 400 pages have been like, do we have time for this? But
It's too daunting. Yeah.
But this is a good way to split things up. And some of you have already been posting and are being really good with the spoilers. So I really appreciate that as well. As always, we love to include the thoughts of our listeners in our discussions. And we definitely appreciate everyone providing feedback for our discussions as well. But yeah, on that note, that'll do it.
I just want to chime in and say, wow, R.F. Kuang, like, she is a HarperCollins author, by the way. She is a number one New York Times bestselling author, and she is speaking at a rally right now. So that's like incredible. And also you can say that
she definitely walks the walk and talks the talk, because, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Because yeah, her book is all about standing up to institutions. And so I could definitely see her as someone who is for the unions. I think
yeah, and it's really yeah, I mean, accidentally, I guess. Because we were actually very concerned, because I didn't find out that Babel was a HarperCollins book until after we announced it. And that was around the time HarperCollins went on strike. So I was like, oh my God, do we have to change books? But then R.F. Kuang openly said she supports the union. So everything worked out.
Yeah.
Also, it's really funny because R.F. Kuang's next book, her upcoming book, Yellow Face, is a satirical critique on how white the publishing world is. So the fact that she is writing a book about how the publishing industry could do much better on diversity and have a better working environment, really speaking her truth.
Finger
right there.
Finger on the pulse, R.F. Kuang.
Yes. Yes.
All right. And on that note, that'll do it for our final mid-month check-in for 2022. Thank you all so much for joining us. Similar to what Riva said, we don't do this enough, but if you have been enjoying our show and our discussions, please leave us a rating review on Apple or wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really does help us out, and it's always kind of affirming sometimes to see the nice things you say about our podcast.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. I mean, like, Marvin and I, we're two people. We're not even in the same room. We're doing this remotely. So really, we are alone when we are recording this podcast, and you know, it's sometimes it really feels like we're talking to a void. So it really helps to get feedback. And, you know, like, it really makes me happy whenever people participate in our book club discussions. So yeah, thank you very much to those who are participating.
And yeah, wishing everyone a happy holidays, happy new year. This will probably be the last Books and Bulb episode for the year. I'm pretty sure we're probably not record our first half of Babel until after the new year.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds about right. I mean, it's a very busy season for all of us. So
yeah, until then, thanks for reading with us, and we'll see you in 2023. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Riva Yu, and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba, and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Sharon.
Hey, Roman.
How are folks still racist?
I know, right? We're like two decades into the 21st century.
Yeah. And second question, where's my jetpack?
Well, I can't help you there, but have I got a podcast for you. Modern Minorities is a show where each week my longtime pal Roman and I uncover common and uncommon truths that we all need to hear for our majority brains and ears.
Yeah, Sharon and I have spoken to doctors, lawyers, directors, climate activists, angry Asians, athletes, chefs, writers.
Folks who are Black, Brown, Gay, Straight, and everything in between.
Past guests have included comedian Margaret Cho, Southern Poverty Law Center journalist Geraldine Mariba, comics creator Jean Lun Yang, and many, many more.
We've even talked about Ramadan, Black History Month, Kamala Khan, and Robin being queer.
It's like we're trying to solve racism with the podcast.
Challenge accepted.
So check out Modern Minorities at modmypod.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Remember, we're all modern minorities, but we're no one's model minority.